Extension number 12941, Molly Binch, reel 5.
Mr. Binch, reel 5. You were going to tell me a story about how one night you were on guard for your particular AT gun section.
That's right, yeah. We all had to take a turn on guard, and it was usually the usual thing, two on, four off. And this one night, remembering that this was in the front line, I was on guard and I must have fallen asleep, because the next morning at stand two, Sergeant Bartsby came along, said, "Right, you lot, man the gun," which we did. And right, he says, "Where's the firing block?" We didn't know, the firing block had gone off the gun. He says, "No," but he said, "because that bastard Binch was asleep on the gun and he's going to get court-martialed for this." Luckily, Heavy Edwards had got the presence of mind to say, "Well, if you took the breech block, you put the old battalion at risk in the front line. If you put Binchy on a charge, I'm going to come out and say my bit." And luckily, that was the end of the incident. But I did. I committed the sin of falling asleep.
Did that often happen? People fall asleep?
That only happened to me once, and I don't know if anybody happened to anybody else. No, it did to me just that once.
Would anything happen while you're on guard duty usually?
Normally, with us, hardly anything. No, hardly anything. No. Nothing.
Now, what about, you mentioned Sergeant Barksby, was it? Or Barksby?
Oh, well, that was Sergeant Barksby that came along.
Who was he exactly?
He was one of the platoon sergeants in the anti-tank platoon. I suppose he must have been orderly sergeant for that night, going round, checking on people, etc. Or it might have been a spot check.
And would your officers come round? I mean, your main officer was Walker, Johnny Walker.
Yes, Lieutenant Walker. Yeah, he came round about once a week, Johnny Walker did, to see us and see if everything was all right and general little talk to us and to try and keep us up to scratch, because if he didn't come round, we wouldn't shave. And Eddie Hallett and I, we'd had all our hair cut off, so we're not shaving and all the hair off, you know, I bet we look right. Warriors, sort of thing.
Well, all your... Right down
the
bald,
lot, yes.
Or
yes. No, absolutely or the lot. Like a skinhead would be today, yeah. And we thought it did us a lot of good. Yeah, we thought it, well, look at my hair today. Yeah, so I'm not doing too bad.
And what about, was there any problem with things like lice or any bugs that you...
Can't remember a lot about lice there, to be honest, no. Although... because we had the opportunity to wash in that there with water brought up. Excuse me. Other things that happened. Did I tell you about the little girl Selha? I think I've said
you
that.
You did mention her.
Ah, yeah.
Was there many Arabs in the vicinity?
The one or two were walking by, and of course there was always the stories of some of them wearing jack boots, you know, and being ferrying information to the...
Did you believe those stories at the time?
Yes, we did. And there were stories of Arabs being shot by the French as well. In fact, I think one of our fellows remarks about that in his book. Yeah, so,
And what did you think of the Arabs? I mean, I know you call them wogs. I mean, is that what you felt?
Well, that's what we felt, yeah. They were wogs. That's all we felt about them, yeah. And, we got no feelings for them at all, to be honest.
So this little Arab girl was an exception?
Oh yeah, she was cute, sort of thing. Yeah, well, we got to know her. I suppose wogs in general were wogs, but one little Arab girl by herself, we got to know her, you know, and knew her name, and we tried to talk in what little bit we could, which was very little.
Did you pick up any languages at all out there, Arabic or...?
The words that most of us learned after... about 5 months in North Africa were Saida Bint and Shufti Kush, which weren't very nice words. That's about it.
Now, just a couple of odd things that happened, you know. There's this thing you mean, you know, about christening your rifle. What was that about?
Oh, yes, yeah. I wrote home one day, "Dear Mum, I've christened my rifle." What happened was there was a yellow message that used to come over. And one day I just stood on the top of the dugout there and let fly with the rifle, and I felt really proud of myself, you know, so able to ride home, I've christened my rifle. Yeah. And there was a little song, afterwards we did a song, which sort of brought something of that in, Shall I?
Yes.
Where's the ink? Yeah, we did a song about it. Not there and then, of course, but when we got back to the rest areas, and Eddie Hallett and I, we used to sing. We used to say, "Don't forget that your rifle is your best friend. Go to sleep, my melancholy rifle. You know I will pull you through. Your sights are set at 500, baby, to shoot the Messerschmitts out of the blue. Every rifle's got a different number. I know yours is 252. Your sights are bent a bit, and your barrel's full of grit. That's why I'm feeling melancholy too."
Now, going on from that, did you have much trouble with the German Air Force?
Well, we did see the German, they kept coming over our positions, not really attacking us at our positions, although we heard later that when they established a rest camp at the Bechelon, there were a couple of attacks there, and I think we had our first casualties there, you know, people really killed and wounded.
But not while you were at the BS.
Not while I was there, no. But the stories came back, of course.
How did you react to those stories? Because you pretty well, from what I can see, taken a bit of an adventurous attitude to the war. It seemed almost fun and an adventure. How did you feel when people you perhaps knew were starting to get hit?
Well, I do distinctly remember one reaction, and this was the day when we were shelled heavy. Before that had been happening, Eddie Hallett and I, the shells are coming over, luckily not too near us, and we were pretending to have microphones and say, "Oh, well, here we go, well, oh, there's a lovely shell dropped over there. Oh, just missed the RSM. Oh, what a pity, Major Hallett." Yes, and all this sort of kidology. And then I must have gone across towards where things had been happening, because I can distinctly remember coming running back and shouting, "It started, the Padres had it." But I can remember also that I wasn't sad about it. I was, "That's it, we're off." I wasn't really unhappy, as I should have been, I suppose. But it wasn't. It's sort of the big adventure. It was, we're in the war proper sort of thing.
And how had the Padre managed to get himself killed? Because that's quite unusual. Where was he when he was killed?
Well, what had happened, as far as I can gather, is that the Padre decided to hold a mass communion in a little wog hut.
How close to your positions? Do you mean at B echelon? Do you mean
no,
forward?
No, it was fairly close to very close to our positions. At the time, I thought it was in line with our positions, but I understand from Major Dennis Cruz that it was slightly back, on another hill, just slightly back from our positions.
But well within artillery range.
But well within artillery range, because they shelled it, and one shell fell on the hut, killing Ginger Martin, who was on the cadre course with us, and also the Padre. But the main news that day was, well, I knew Ginger Martin being killed and the Padre.
And at this stage, you hadn't come under much artillery fire yourself, or mortar fire, on your position?
Well, on the battalion positions, we had some, but not a lot.
But not round you, particularly?
Not particularly close to us, no.
The rest camp that was established at B Echelon, did you actually get to go to it?
Yes, Eddie Hallett and I went there. Yeah, we went to the rest camp.
Where was it exactly?
It was at Sedgenham Woods, which would be about, I would think, about 12 miles back, something around there. And it was a break. We were able to have a shower of a kind, and it was out of the line, out of the general routine of being on stag every night, sort of thing. And we made another little song about that, of course. So, which we made up about the rest camp, and I recall it went. We're dreaming of that old rest camp, just like the Ritz at Nottingham. he shouts out, fellas, come and get into the queue. Don't miss your fags and chocolates, we're dreaming of those old rations of bully beef and Irish stew, where there's eggs and bacon and ham. And on Sunday tea times there'll be spam. But when we got to the rest camp, oh what a shock we had in store. For instead of bacon, they were making Tinker's donuts by the score. How does he put those holes in? And when they saw Wally and Ginger, they put more water in the stew. Though we're feeling lonely and blue, it was thanks to yeast fight we got through.
Now you were, that was your only trip to the rest camp.
That's right, the ones,
and
yes.
How long would you be there about?
I think 4 days to a week, something like that. Yeah. Probably about 4 or 5 days.
And yes. The rest of the routine in front of Green Hill and the rest of it stayed pretty well the same?
I carried on. It was the weather and cleaning the guns, maintaining the guns, standing to, all that sort of thing, yes.
Now, the back end of February, there was a change in the routine, and we move into what was the Battle of Sedgenine.
Yes.
Could you take me through that period then?
As we remember, suddenly we got a call to move out, which meant the whole battalion leaving that area. And we got most of the guns out, but one gun we couldn't get out, and that was Harold Bryan's gun. And Johnny Walker had to go up there and spike it.
You know. Why couldn't you get it out?
It was just stuck in the mud. It just couldn't be moved. You know, they just couldn't get it out. It was that buried that much, you see. And so.
And you hadn't been firing them.
No, it hadn't been fired. Just been stuck in the mud. Yeah.
And you couldn't get any transport up to pull it out. Or?
Well, obviously they got the Cardinal Lloyds up to pull them out. Yes. Yeah.
But it wouldn't
couldn't,
work.
They couldn't get that out. No. I see there's a note somewhere that the Remy eventually got it out later. This probably might have been after the campaign or...
I should have checked. How many guns did you have in the platoon?
We had 6 guns, but I only know to where about 2 of them were. You see, where the others were, I just don't know. So, as I say, Johnny spiked that gun, and of course, later on, Hallett and Binch did a song which reminds us of that. It went... Johnny, the old coal man, the old coal man from Nottingham. He was in charge of anti-tank. When he'd had whiskey, he'd play such pranks. We were on the move one night. Johnny got harassed and took a fright. Went up to Bryan's to pound the site to see if everything was all right. When he saw the gun was jammed, up the breech around he ran. Then on the emergency gear he slammed, and up went the whole fucking lot, shit hot. Sorry about the language.
So it was spiked properly, they didn't just take the breech block out?
No, he blew it off and it went up like a banana, the barrel split, yes.
So now you were pulled out, this was quite a bit of an emergency,
yes,
pull
so
out from the
Well, we were pulled out to some other positions.
Did someone replace you, I presume, in front of Green Hill? You might not have known who, but I presume you were replaced.
I presume we were. In the heat of it, we came out.
And what happened then?
Then we came out and... although I know that we stayed in some other positions, I can't remember those positions, but I do remember that we all went towards Beja, because the rumour was that the Jerry had broken through there. And we got to Beja, and all we did was stay in the convoy on the road, because apparently everything had been sorted out. And then the next thing we know...
Whereabouts was Beja in relationship to where you were before?
Just Beja from us was about 30 miles on... on our right, where would that be?
The south.
To the south, yes. To the
it's
south.
Further into the desert, so to speak.
That's right, yes, yes. And as I say, when we got there, nothing happened, and eventually we turned round, and as I remember, we got back to our, what had been our something like our original positions, and we personally dug our gun in on a kind of a bend where there was a sort of a hill and a quarry at the back of us. And this hill and quarry turned out to be where the whole carrier platoon was situated, amongst some small trees that got the bends and everything.
Now, this area can be... We've actually got a copy of a map of this area in the museum now.
Yes.
In your file as well. I'll deposit it. Which shows the area. How long were you in there before the German attack came through?
Well, it seems to me we'd got set up, and I'd gone up the hill to try and borrow a rifle, which I'll say about later. But probably about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, about 1:30 to 2 o'clock. All this time, by the way, there were sounds of battle and shells and all that. Things were hotting up, and we knew that there was an attack on the way, but we couldn't see anybody yet.
And you didn't know which direction particularly?
Well, yes, we knew it was going to be from the direction of Greenhill. We were expecting things.
So from the east, due east,
yes,
basically,
the east,
along
yeah.
the roads that, yes. that linked them.
Well, my cordon Lloyd had gone back again, and I'd left my rifle in there, so I clambered up this slope towards the carrier platoon to see if I could borrow a rifle, but I couldn't. So then down the hill again, back to where the gun was. Our gun was actually covering the road, as I remember it. We got a field of a fire, perhaps 100 yards or so, but covering the road as things came round there.
The road from Greenhill?
The road from Greenhill, yes, yeah.
Now, were you properly dug in? Did you have time to dig in?
I can't remember it being dug in at all, no. It was just situated there.
Just on the ground?
Just the wheels off and ready, yes, yeah. I don't think we would have had a lot of time.
Did you have any time to dig yourself slit trenches or any cover at all?
No, we didn't dig any. To my knowledge, we hadn't got any trenches or anything just there.
So the 5 or 6 hours you'd been there, you got there early in the morning on the 2nd, you had a few hours, and then the attack came in at
that's right,
2.
Yes.
What were your first indications of the attack?
Well, the first indications were the sounds of shells and that, and crackle of arms, small arms fire, etc.
From your own battalion, was it?
No, from
Still
from Jerry.
From
yes,
Jerry.
Yes. There had been some firing earlier in the morning. I think I've got the right day, when some of our lads fired at some Arabs or something, and we all thought, well, the silly buggers have given the positions away before even Jerry comes. We thought that. Whether that was the same day, I'm not quite sure, but I feel it was. And the next thing that I knew was, from the hill where I'd just been up to the carrier platoon to try and borrow a rifle, suddenly there's a rifle fire, and when we turn around, it's Jerry's standing and kneeling amongst those same trees at us, firing away.
And that was your first sight of them?
That was the first sight of the Germans. That's all we knew. We didn't know the carriers had been overrun or anything. All we knew was suddenly Jerry's are firing at us. We're panic stations because our gun is firing the wrong way.
So this was immediate. You were pointing 180 degrees the wrong way.
Absolutely, yes, yes. Our gun was.
You were pointing at the road, and this was from the hill.
They were firing from above, and about what I would think, 150 yards away, something like that.
Behind you.
200 yards behind us. Yes. So at that point. I remember I got my greatcoat on. I remember taking out the firing mechanism, which is the breech block, which had been taught to immobilise the gun, bunging it in my greatcoat pocket. I remember Eddie Hallett and I running through a sort of a big concrete sewer pipe or something like that, or something. Where it definitely went under the road and came out the other side.
So you ran forward. Down what there was left of the hill. You were slightly up the hill, were you?
No, we were more or less on level with the road.
Level with the road.
Yeah, but so this went underneath the road, and we ran under that, and came out into a field on the other side.
Now, had any of the... What happened to the rest of the crew? Had any of the crew been hit? Because it was quite short range.
Yes. No, none of the crew, to my knowledge, had been hit. What happened to the others at that point? I don't know.
So it was, as far as you were concerned, every man for himself, with the exception
That's
that you
it.
Did do the standard thing of taking the breech block out.
Which I did, yes.
Had you been ordered to do that? I mean,
we've been taught to do it, yes, yes.
Did Heavy Edwards give any... He was your sergeant. Did he give any orders?
No, it was Corporal Jukes who was the...
Corporal Jukes.
Yes.
Did he give any orders?
Can't recall anything. It was just... it was every, as you say.
And you were you just the nearest to the breech blocker? Or did you just have more presence of mind, perhaps?
Possibly, it just came to me to do it. You know, it's got to be the thing to do. And then
were you still under fire as you ran forward?
Yeah, we were.
The tunnel thing.
Yeah, as we were being fired on there, as we ran across the road as well through the field, we were still being shot at. We could hear them shooting at us. We couldn't actually hear any bullets sort of whistling past us. We could hear the firing at us.
Was it rifle fire or was there automatic fire in it?
Rifle fire it was.
Not automatic then?
No. It was rifle fire. No, I couldn't say it was machine guns, no. And as we ran through the fields, we're running, I've got Eddie at the side of me and I said to Eddie, what colour's blood? Yellow, he says. Crikey, I've been shot. This is one of our standard jokes.
Really do that, though?
I really did that. Yes, I really did it. Yes. Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yeah. As we ran round. And then we ran
now,
through
Now, hang
this.
On. Can I just, looking yes. at this, looking at the map here, in front, which people can look at when perhaps listening to this, you went under the road towards the railway line, I presume. Did you see the railway line? That would be the next thing in front of you.
No, didn't see the railway line. No.
Did you start running then back along the road? Because from what I can see of this, there'd be D Company on a hill in front of you if you'd run across the road.
I ran across the road, yes. And then we ran round to the right, to our right.
So past D Company position, behind them in a sense.
We probably ran in front of D Company positions. D Company, I didn't know at the time D Company were there. All we knew, the only thing we ever knew was that our gun was there and that the rest of our battalion was somewhere
behind you.
Behind us, or yes, something like that.
On three low hills, or low
yes,
hills.
Yes, that's all we knew about
so
that.
So you ran in front of D Company, and where then?
And then we ran along the road, and so I imagine we may have run along here in between. I definitely don't recall running over the railway line again at that point. But then we ran back to the road and we saw Captain Walker on a gun there.
So we went this would there, be the other side of the hill.
The other side.
So
of
you were on the front slope of the hill, in a sense, and he was on the back slope. Like, as you had been at on the positions in front of Green Hill, on a back slope.
Yes, that's right.
So his gun was, in a sense, doing what your gun had done at the other time.
Yes, Johnny Walker's gun. We call it Johnny Walker's gun because of what happened later. But
he wasn't his gun really, though.
No, it wasn't. He was a platoon commander. The gun belonged to somebody else.
But you don't know who?
I don't know who, no.
Now, so you ran round, and what did you see as you saw? Well, you saw this gun, and what else did you see? I mean, was there anyone on it? What was happening?
As I ran round, let's think hard about this. I do know there was a slit trench at the side of the... It was sort of a hedge going up the hill, and there was a slit trench there, and there was a gun crew was in the slit trench. I also saw Captain Walker there and reported him that we'd lost our gun. Can't remember what else was said.
So it's just you and Eddie at this time?
Eddie and myself, yes.
You'd lost the other crew.
We don't know what happened to them. Where they'd gone, we don't know. And then, we're there some time, and then just as I'm...
Did you join them in the slit trench, the rest of the other
crew?
No,
I never got in the slit trench, because to my best of my knowledge, as we were talking then, an officer popped his head round from Johnny Walker's... as I look at Johnny Walker from the right, going up the hill, an officer popped and said, or crawled through the undergrowth and popped popped up and said, tank's coming, Johnny.
And would that, could that have been someone from Battalion HQ? They were on the hill.
I would imagine it would be, yes, yes. Yeah. And that Johnny said, man the gun, and nobody seemed to move quick enough. So Johnny Walker then got in the firing position, and I got in the loading position.
Now, when you say nobody moved quick enough, is that... Did they not move? In other words, were they not reporting for duty, so to speak? Or was it just that you and Johnny Walker, it was such an emergency that you two got there first?
I think we just did it without thinking, yes. I think.
Do you know what happened to the rest of the crew during the action that followed?
Yeah, yes, they were in the trench. They just stayed put in the trench. So.
Should they not really have helped load? Or?
They should have done something, yes. Yeah. But nobody did anything. I do recall that. It was just Johnny and I.
So there could be an implied criticism, if you see what I mean.
It could be, yeah.
But
yeah.
We'll not go too far into that, I think. So you got on the gun, and what happened next?
Well, a little bit of a pause, and then along the road into our field of view came the first German AFV. We didn't know what it was going to be. It turned out to be an armoured car.
Now, you were looking... There was this. You were at the bottom of the hill, or slightly up on the side of the hill.
That's right.
From
yes.
the picture you showed me.
Yes.
And there was a hedge running along the front of that hill.
That's right. Yes.
That led, in a sense, straight to the road.
That's right. Yes.
And so you were sighted, in essence, along that hedge
yes.
to the road.
That's right. Yes. Right. So the first one comes along, and Johnny then I'm loading, and Johnny fires at it. It just kept going. Johnny fired it. I loaded. Because the shell shoots out and then you bung another one in. I loaded, Johnny fired again. And fired, I would think, I don't know, three or four shots at it. Before it went out of view to our right. And we didn't hit it.
It was going along the road?
It was going along. And all the time, yes.
What did it go behind? I know that's a silly question, but...
I think the road changed shape there.
It does
the road
bend.
Changed shape there, and we couldn't see it anymore.
And did you, when you fired a gun like that, could you see where your shell was going? I mean, obviously you probably can't see the shell at that side, could you see what you were hitting?
We did on the next when the next one was coming.
But I mean,
but on this one, we just fired and.
So you wouldn't see where the shell landed. Presumably, you missed the armoured car, but you didn't see where it went.
No, well, I was too busy putting the shells in. Probably Johnny Walker would have a better view of that.
And would you, you'd be fired, the anti-tank gun, it would just fire armoured piercing?
That was fair.
It wouldn't fire anything else, would it?
I'm not sure whether, because I know we would be using armoured piercing there. I don't know that it ever could fire anything else, isn't it?
That's fine, you were using armoured piercing,
piercing,
fine.
Yes, yes.
So the first one had gone, you'd missed it.
Yes, and of course the gun was rebounding back in, we were sighted next to a cactus plant and it kept rebounding back and I'd got this cactus in me for days afterwards. And we missed it and nothing else happened, there was nothing else came. So Johnny Walker got it, reached into his back pocket and pulled out a flask of whiskey and said, "Do you want a drink, Binch?" You know? And I said the words he's never forgotten. I said, "No, thank you, sir. I'd rather die sober." Stupid thing to say, but actually that's what they actually say. And he never forgot that, and neither did I.
Were you scared at all? I mean, was that bravado, or were you fairly confident? And
Well, I was expecting something to come back any second. I thought, we hadn't hit him. He's bound to hit us. But it didn't happen. So
were you not expecting them to come over the hill? I mean, you'd seen them on that, from the map, that same group of hills anyway, the same high ground was where they'd come from. Were you not expecting them to come over your side as well?
When you say them, do you mean the armoured cars?
The Germans.
Or do you mean the infantry? We could hear all this happening behind us, you know, but our concern at that moment was...
So you knew there were still some troops, some British, some of your battalion on the hill above you?
We knew all our lads were there, yes.
And that it was just the front
half.
Even
though we'd lost the carrier platoon, I knew we'd lost the carrier platoon. I'd probably reported to Captain Walker we'd lost the carrier platoon as well. But our concern was that. And then we're still sitting by the gun, Johnny and I,